If you like what you're hearing, why not try a StephCast subscription? Only $4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance. Go to stephaniemiller.com to find out how.
Our friend Ian Millhiser is our legal analyst. Pardon me. Author of the book, Injustices, the Supreme Court's History of Comforting the Comfortable and Afflicting the Afflicted. He may have some thoughts on our latest Supreme Court news. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. And can I just say, Jesus Christ, Donald Trump is naming Supreme Court justices. How did this happen?
Yes, yes. Let's start with that. The things that you think things you read can't be true, but I'm sure you've heard this already this morning. Trump's Supreme Court pick Neil Gorsuch founded and led a club called Fascism Forever against liberal faculty at his elite all-boys D.C. prep school. The club was set up to rally against the left-wing tendencies of his professors while attending a Jesuit all-boys preparatory high school near Washington, D.C. You didn't think you'd read that, did you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the radio, so I can't use the words that I want to use
right now.
But, like, you know, everyone went to college with this kid. Like, every campus has that one guy who writes terrible right-wing columns in some campus publication and, you know, and thinks they're a victim. And apparently Neil Gorsuch was that guy.
Yes. Yes. By the way, you don't even know where to start with this stuff. You tweeted, Trump summoned both of his SCOTUS finalists to D.C. without telling them who's the nominee. What a move. That is a D move of epic proportions. I mean, you almost, like, we just did this, we just played the audio of him asking us to pray for the Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Apprentice ratings at the prayer breakfast. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, only Donald Trump could turn a Supreme Court selection process into a reality show. You know, and there were great jokes. I mean, everyone thought that he was going to come out with both of them and give one of them a rose.
Wow. You wrote yesterday about this story about how he was, Gorsuch was skiing when he found out that Scalia died, and he said, I'm not embarrassed to admit I couldn't see the rest of the way down the mountain for the tears. I'm like, oh, God.
Barf.
Just what we need, a Scalia fanboy, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, based on what I've seen of Gorsuch's record, you know, if David Koch had sex with an actual Hobby Lobby store, Neil Gorsuch would be the offspring. I mean, it's extraordinary how many things he's taken the right-wing position on.
Yeah. You say you write that he's never ruled directly on the viability of Roe v. Wade, but in a 2009 book entitled The Future of Assisted Suicide and Euthanasia that is heavy with the kind of political rhetoric opponents of abortion deploy in the battle over reproductive choice, he wrote, human life is fundamentally and inherently valuable. The intentional taking of a human life by private persons is always wrong. That sounds pretty cut and dried.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any doubt that on reproductive issues, this guy is going to be as far to the right as they come. I mean, he voted to make it harder to get birth control in the actual Hobby Lobby case. That case came up through his court, and he voted the wrong way on it. He's used the rhetoric of abortion opponents in his book. There was one case where he sort of bent the court's rules in a very strange way to try to cut off funding for Planned Parenthood. So he's never directly ruled on whether abortion is constitutionally protected or not, but there's enough there that you don't really need to read too much between the lines to figure out what's going on.
Well, I mean, and as you know, Elizabeth Warren said yesterday, it's basically, you know, big business. I think you wrote about this too, that he would become big business's dream justice.
Yeah, no, this is pretty technical, but it's really important. So there's this case from a while back called Chevron. And Chevron is basically a case about judicial modesty. It says that when Democrats are in power, the Democratic president has fairly broad leeway to regulate. When Republicans are in power, Republicans have fairly broad leeway to regulate. And Gorsuch wants to take that power from the executive branch and transfer a bunch of it to the branch that he happens to be in, the judiciary. And what that means as a practical matter is the Supreme Court's probably going to be controlled by Republicans for a really long time. So as a practical matter, it means that Republican presidents will still be able to govern because they'll go and ask permission to regulate from the Republican Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will say yes. And Democratic presidents will try to regulate, and they'll go and ask permission from the Republican Supreme Court, and the Republican Supreme Court will say, no, 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 you can't have that environmental regulation. You can't bring up workers' wages. You can't make it easier to have unions. You can't do any of these things. And that's going to be our future if Neil Gorsuch is making the law.
By the way, you in terms of the resistance, you tweeted protests at airports are good. Loud, angry protests at every single event attended by a Republican member of Congress are even better. You also said one thing I've learned this week: conservative-ish Dems get really spooked when you tweet that they aren't doing enough to resist Trump. If people aren't paying attention to what's going on in the streets in this country right now, Ian, I don't know what to say. But
yeah,
you know, didn't someone try to nail Spicer down yesterday on, you know, the hypocrisy is so breathtaking. As someone said, this is actually Merrick Garland's seat. It's not Justice Scalia's seat, right? And the fact that they were on record as saying they would block anybody Hillary Clinton put forward, and I think they tried to nail Spicer down on saying, okay, so if, you know, someone steps down or passes away at the end of Trump's, you know, first term or whatever, you'll go on record as pledging that you won't nominate anybody, right? And of course they won't, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is about a power grab. I mean, what right. this is about, and it's really frightening. I mean, I went back and I listened to the speech that President Obama gave when he introduced Merrick Garland, and he said that if the Republicans do what they were threatening to do at the time, it undermines the entire Supreme Court. Because, you know, if Gorsuch is confirmed, every 5-4 decision is going to have an asterisk by it. Gorsuch will never be a legitimate justice. He will always be the guy in the stolen seat. And the Supreme Court only functions because we trust its rulings. You know, I mean, the president has an army, so we kind of have to listen to him. But the Supreme Court, like, basically, you know, the reason why we obey them is because we respect them as an institution, we respect that their decisions come from the rule of law, and if people are stealing seats, you know, all of a sudden the reason to respect those decisions goes away, and it undermines the judiciary as an institution.
Yeah. By the way, you also talked about Sally Yates. I mean, what a disgrace. You said Dana, the guy that's now appointed in because she was fired, you said he can either be a hero or be a warning held up to generations of lawyers. And the fact that he went after her so personally, right, a betrayal to the Justice Department for standing up for the Constitution. And you don't take an oath to the president. You take an oath to the Constitution.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I hope for the sake of this guy that Trump found to be the acting AG, that there is not an afterlife, because I would not want to have to defend myself. Look at what happened here. So, like, Sally Yates says that she's not going to defend this unconstitutional order. Trump pushes her out of the way. There's actually an order of precedence where, like, okay, if the deputy AG is pushed out, then there's someone who's, like, supposed to be next in line and someone after that. And you have to go pretty deep into the order of precedence before you get to the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, which is what our acting AG did before. So what it looks like is that Trump went hunting for someone he could find that would do his bidding. Right. And this is the person who said, yep, I'll go ahead and round up those mugs for you.
So Ian, what's happening with all, what's going to happen? We've just never seen this, particularly this soon. We have Virginia. I mean, all these places suing Trump, suing the Trump administration, right? I mean, it looks like they're ignoring court orders, right?
Yeah. I mean, in some cases, I mean, there's this weird sort of give and take where, like, on the one hand, they're starting to back off somewhat. Now they're saying that green card holders can be let in. On the other hand, you have individual Customs and Border Patrol officers who are refusing to let people's lawyers come in to speak to them in violation of a court order, and the White House doesn't seem to be giving much direction on this. I mean, normally what happens when an executive order is handed down is that, you know, first of all, it's vetted through all the agencies, which didn't happen here. This one, I think, was mostly vetted by two guys named Steve. And then, you know, you vet it through the lawyers to make sure that it's actually legal. That also didn't happen here. And then after you've done all that, you release a ton of guidance and you communicate with the agencies so that when it comes down, everyone who has to implement this thing has instructions on how to do that. And none of that has happened. And, you know, a big reason why I think some of these court orders are being violated and why there's so much illegality going on, I mean, some of it is because Trump is a monster, but a lot of it is that you've got these, you know, fairly low-level customs officials who are sitting in an airport with no instructions on what to do.
Right.
They've got lawyers yelling at them. They've got, you know, the agencies aren't telling them what's supposed to happen. And, I mean, they're making the wrong call, but they're making the wrong call because, like, it's not supposed to be the job of every individual officer to know in that moment what's going on. There's, you know,
right.
The government's supposed to tell them what to do.
Ian, I keep asking other guests that are not constitutional scholars like you are, but the other huge story that I'm sure you're keeping track of is this Russia story. You know, we just had Malcolm Nance on again yesterday. You know, you've heard about this, you know, one KGB guy that ended up dead, three others arrested for treason in Russia, you know, for that are apparently connected to this, the hacking of the United States election. What happens if treason and collusion is proved while they're already in office? What happens?
I mean, what we have found is we have found what could be a fatal flaw in our Constitution, which is there is a mechanism for dealing with a president where you distrust their loyalty or where you feel that they are criminal or where you feel that they may have been involved in some sort of terrible conspiracy. And that mechanism is impeachment. Like, you know, the way that you – well, there's two mechanisms. One is impeachment. The other is the 25th Amendment, which allows the vice president and the president's cabinet to remove the president if need be, at least temporarily. But both of those methods require Republicans to step up. You know, either Republicans in Congress need to impeach the president and convict him, or Republicans in the cabinet need to step up, decide this guy needs to be removed. And then under the 25th Amendment to keep Trump out permanently and then take a 2/3 vote of both houses of Congress. So either way, you know, there is a mechanism to do it.
Right, but if it's proven that the whole Trump campaign, meaning they both were elected illegitimately, I mean, and there was collusion involved, I think you're right. We are really in unprecedented times, as he would say.
Right, and you know, it's exactly right. I mean, just Pence was, you know, may have been a problem as well. Now you can impeach him too, and then we get President Paul Ryan. Won't that be awesome? But you know, the problem is that I think that there are a lot of lawmakers in Washington right now, and they're thinking that Trump is the guy who brought them to the dance, and what they really want to do is voucherize Medicare, and what they really want to do is cut Medicaid benefits.
Yeah.
And they've been wanting to do this for a really long time, and he just nominated the Supreme Court justice, who's their dream justice. And if they take him out over something petty, like he may have, you know, he may be in league with Vladimir Putin, or he's about to start a war with Australia, or
right.
any of the other, I mean, I'm not making that up. He actually had a thing with Australia yesterday.
Yes.
You know, if they take him out over something small like that, then they don't get their Medicare voucher.
Oh, Ian. Aye, aye, aye. You know what? Can I just say no guest that I've had has made me feel better about anything, just exponentially worse. Thank you.
Yeah, I am here to bring joy and hope to you, Stephanie.
Well, as I always say, whenever God shuts a door somewhere, he shuts a window too, and we're all screwed. Good morning. Thanks for coming on, Ian. We'll talk to you again soon.
It's great to chat with you, Stephanie.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.